Welcome to the Bitcoin Infinity Academy, brought to you by the Plan B Network and Bitbox. This is our course on my second book, Bitcoin Independence Reimagined, from 2020. And I'm Knut Swanholm. I'm here, as always, with Luke DeWolf. Good morning, Luke. How are you today?
Good morning, Knut. I'm doing great. We are covering poverty and prosperity. Should be an interesting one. A little bit shorter, but a few of the chapters in this book are just slightly shorter. Never a bad thing to just have a little bit of a thought nugget discussion, though.
No, more discussion time for us, I guess.
Absolutely. And so before we dive in, just a reminder that the best way to get involved with the Academy is to go to our Geyser page, geyser.fund/project/infinity. You can get all the details about how you can get involved with the Academy, including joining our private discussion groups where we go over all of the details of the course. And of course, you can join the live streams and watch while we do the recordings live. There's usually some funny outtakes. So, shall we dive in, Knut?
Absolutely. Please read the chapter for me.
I shall do so. Poverty and prosperity. The gaps are increasing. How many times have you heard this rhetoric? Whether it's the wealth gap between countries or the pay gap between the genders, the gap itself is always marketed as a vile thing and a societal problem that needs to be solved. We are led to believe that wealth cannot be acquired by any other means than by exploiting the poor in one way or another. The Uncle Scrooges of the 1% are somehow leeching off of the lifeblood of the less fortunate, using them for their evil capitalistic schemes. This rhetoric is completely backward, though, and merely serves as a tool for the real elite to keep all of us ducks in line. First of all, economics is not a zero-sum game. John, the fisherman, can sell fish to Bob, the builder, and Bob can build John a fishing rod in order for him to increase his daily catch. By doing this, John can lower the price of fish, which is a net good, pun intended, for everyone in the economy, except the fish. In an economy with perfectly sound money, in other words, money with a fixed supply, the value of the medium of exchange used in the economy doesn't go down but up, making everyone in that economy wealthier as the economy grows. We are so used to operating under inflationary currencies that only a select few of us have experienced this, though. Of course, we've all seen the prices of goods that have had exponentially decreasing production costs, such as electronics and computing power, go down. But in a sound money economy, all prices go down as overall productivity rises. If the amount of money is stable, while the amount of goods we can produce increases, it will necessarily take less money to buy more goods. All right, a fair bit to unpack there. What do you think, Knut?
Yeah, it's the pay gap between the genders. I wonder if I included all 18 genders here when I wrote this. And if there are no genders, then there can be no pay gap, right? Because we're all the same flock. Anyway, jokes aside, this is all, you know, the nature of the free market is deflationary, as Jeff says. It's all about that. In a functioning free market, in actual capitalism, which is something we've never tried as humans, where we cannot inflate the money supply, the result of that is that all prices go down over time. And due to the simple fact that if humans practice doing things, they get better at it. That's how we phrased it in Clown World, if I remember correctly. And this is one of those chapters in the earlier books that are sort of a seed for something more fleshed out coming in a later book. And it's also a TLDR on the price of tomorrow, I'd say, the beginning of this. It's simple and it's obvious once you see it, yet most people have never thought about this. They think rising prices or stable prices is a good thing, when it's actually not. They should be falling.
Yeah, the deflationary stuff is definitely counterintuitive, of course, as we've said time and again. But it for sure ties into the gaps that we're talking about, too. And I mean, I think the next paragraph or two will be a little more instructive as to what we're actually getting at here. But yeah, I for sure think that the discussion about the gaps is an interesting one. And it's one of those things that kind of seems like it's against, so to say, fairness, but it's actually the most fair thing in the world for there to be these sorts of gaps.
Yeah, I mean, the gaps are a result of a functioning free market. More productive people get wealthier faster, and thus the gaps are increasing. And the very notion that they shouldn't, it is all backwards. They have to increase. That means it works. The only way to make them not increase is negative behavior, to taking people's stuff and being mean and evil. And I get into that in later paragraphs here, so maybe we should read on.
Sounds good. Reading on. Historically, only two phenomena have been able to actually decrease the wealth gap between people: natural disasters and war. It is unclear which of the two categories socialist policies, interventionism, and central banking fall under. In a well-oiled economy, wealth gaps will increase naturally, since more productive people will always accumulate wealth at a higher pace than less productive ones. This phenomenon is a good thing and of benefit to everyone, because in order to monetize his productivity, man needs to serve other people's needs. Every capitalist is a slave to his customers' wants and needs. Unfortunately, no one on earth has ever been able to enjoy the full potential of a truly free global market, because we've never had a functioning, sound money economy up and running properly. Why not? Because the temptation of money printing is simply too powerful for the human mind. No nation's central bank or government has ever resisted the urge to debase its national currency for its own benefit. Bitcoin is a different beast altogether, and its issuance rate is beyond the reach of mere humans. It can't be tampered with, regardless of temptations. Okay, so, yeah, as we were saying, these gaps are natural and they're good.
Absolutely. And falling prices and increasing gaps are two sides of the same coin. And the ones who have the most to benefit from this phenomenon are the poorest classes in society. They are the ones who can really benefit from prices dropping, because it means they can afford more stuff. It's super simple, really. And wealthy people having more resources only means they will spend more and thus boost the economy by demanding more goods and services. It is what it is.
Right. And I mean, I think the other point here is that it's harsh but true, and I say this a lot, it's harsh but true that more productive people will get more rewards out of life if we reduce the number of interventionisms that there are. But the thing is, the counter effect, it is the interventionism that is causing the problem for people, right? Like, governments picking winners by choosing to subsidize this or that and taking money away by taxation just to give it to whoever. I mean, the give a shit matrix is basically the explainer for why that is inefficient and ineffective. And then it creates all the incentives for people to not work and simply have the government pay for their stuff, right? So it's sort of that it might seem natural to want to fix this somehow or help people who are less fortunate, but it just feeds into the problem, right?
Yeah, and also this zero-sum game thing, I think that plays in a lot to this, because in a fiat economy, it's almost inevitable that you have to screw some people over in order to get ahead of the curve and actually make money faster than everyone else. So like, that is the thing. We've lived in that for so long that we think it's natural. That it's the fang and claw thing. If you fight it out instead of trading, you have a winner and a loser. If you trade, both parties will have to think that they have something to gain from the interaction. So it's a net positive for both parties. And this is what separates the free market interactions and voluntary interactions from involuntary one involving aggression. And as I said, the fact that we've had so many involuntary ones and that involuntarism is baked into everything the state touches, VAT, taxes, whatever, that means that it's not necessarily a win-win for both parties. And this is what we're trying to get away from.
Totally agree. Shall we continue the discussion?
Sure.
All right, continuing. In a sound money economy, and arguably in any economy, you can't fight poverty by fighting prosperity. In a sound money economy, everyone profits from economic growth. The road out of poverty inevitably leads to more and more prosperity. To set a limit to this or to interfere with the process will hinder a person from becoming wealthy, but it will, at the same time, hinder his potential customers from acquiring the tools they need to lift themselves out of poverty. In a truly free market, sound money economy, wealth taxes are a net loss to everyone. The costlier a monetary good is to produce, the cheaper everything else becomes compared to it, and vice versa. The cheaper the money, the costlier everything else. As time goes by, Bitcoin becomes costlier and costlier to mine. It looks like Bitcoin will hold this property forever, since the last coin will be mined around the year 2140. After that, minting new Bitcoin will be close to infinitely expensive. This means that everyone who holds any Bitcoin will always profit whenever the Bitcoin economy grows, just as everyone loses from holding fiat money. All right, some fairly important points here, the Bitcoin of it all.
Yeah, and there's a couple of sentences that Jeff Booth later on rephrased in The Price of Tomorrow. One of those wonderful catchphrases, scarcity in, or abundance in money, scarcity in everything else, scarcity in money, abundance in everything else. That's what this paragraph is saying, I think.
Yeah, and well, one of the points that I actually quite like that is related to the Jeff Booth thesis and all this is that there is actually no such thing as economic growth if you fix the denominator. Economic growth is price deflation, right?
Yeah.
So if you're operating in an environment where what you measure the economy in is fixed, if you by nature are quote unquote growing the economy, you're simply increasing the number of things that you have to divide 21 million by. So the economic growth can equally just be measured as price deflation in that regard. So we supposedly have all this economic growth happening, but prices are going up. And I think that's just one of the light bulb moments for me, anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. GDP is such a vulgar metric that they include, you know, weapons and weapons of war and medicine and stuff in when they calculate GDP. It's not at all measuring how well individuals are doing in that country. And you can't measure economic things. It's impossible. Like, especially if you're using a fucked up denominator that cannot measure anything in the first place. But as you say, GDP would be completely steady on a Bitcoin standard because you can't, the number doesn't change. That's why number goes up, because number doesn't change. Purchasing power is the thing that goes up, not number.
And there's number no goes way down, to, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Number goes down with lost coins and stuff, especially. But it's sort of like with so many other things, Bitcoin is just shining a light on how obvious things really are and how complicated we made them. And this is one of those things. Like, why are we measuring at all? Couldn't we just let prices fall and just enjoy everything getting better for everyone? Like, why do we need a measurement? Oh, the only reason is so that one country can compare itself to another country, and they shouldn't exist in the first place. Like, it's all, everything the state says is a lie and everything it owns is stolen. It's super true.
I mean, I'll devil's advocate just one point there. The idea of the measurement, there is value in that so that people can make their own informed decisions, right? Like, if you want to say which country is better than another on this or that metric, GDP per capita is not terrible. In a fixed point in time, the trends might be screwed up for the reasons we've discussed. And similarly, if you're measuring like productivity of some kind, how much output a country produces of a certain good is worth measuring. But as we say, with the denominator is broken, and they're trying to measure things in the economy itself growing. Like again, it just, how does the economy growing make any sense at all? It's only growing in the monetary units, then there being more monetary units. How does the economy grow otherwise? It's just so weird. I don't get it.
I guess the idea is to have the money expand at roughly the same pace as everything else, but which is like impossible to actually pull off. But it, as you say, like information itself is never bad to have. It's just that you need to be aware of what the information actually is and what it actually measures when you're doing your economic assessment of whether you should move to another country or not. So you, of course, you can have some use for the GDP number. You should just be aware what it is and how the basket of goods changes over time when measuring inflation and such. Like those numbers are also completely skewed and don't include high-value assets such as fine art or real estate. That's the thing. There's nothing wrong with information. There's nothing wrong with making economic assessments before making a decision about anything. You should just be aware of what it is you're actually measuring with GDP.
Very much so. Should we continue the discussion on the Bitcoin of it all?
Yes, why not?
Moving on. Some claim that Bitcoin was designed for black markets and that without state control, money laundering and other economic crimes will be harder to fight against in an economy without government oversight. From an Austrian economics perspective, this is absurd and just another proof of how effective the brainwashing machine of the interventionists has been. To a libertarian, there is no such thing as a black market since markets aren't intrinsically good or bad, and there's nothing morally wrong in trading one item for another. In well-oiled, functioning liberal democracies, the necessity for black markets is somewhat limited. But the black markets of Venezuela, Zimbabwe, or Cuba tell a different story. White markets might keep so-called dangerous goods off the streets, but they reinforce the status quo, let cartels have things their way, and form monopolies. We are yet to see the final result of the last century's worldwide interventionist policies, but while we wait, there's only one type of tamper-proof way to transact peer-to-peer besides barter. That ought to mean something. Yeah, so money laundering is good is the TLDR here.
Yeah, I guess. So why do people choose the white market above the black market? Why do people voluntarily pay the taxes? Even when they have a choice to accept cash and just not tell the government about some stuff, most of the time in developed countries, merchants don't do that, but instead they actually write down the whole thing and they do the accounting properly and they pay their taxes to the government. And if you really think about why, because they would have preferred not paying that thing. That is obvious, like more money for them. It's because of the risk involved, because the risk is so high because you can, the punishments for not paying taxes can be very costly to avoiding paying taxes can be very costly. So you're putting yourself at risk each time you do a black market transaction, especially if you're a small company that is under scrutiny, like that's being watched by Big Brother. And the merchant won't tell you that this is the reason because he can't. And this is prevails throughout society. People say that, oh, no, I pay my taxes. I'm proud to pay my taxes. Because they don't want your fellow man to know that you would prefer not to. So it gives people not only an incentive to pay this mafia fee, but it also gives people an incentive to lie to one another about why they're doing it and to lie to one another about being a good citizen. I saw this. I've been on Cuba several times, and there it was absurd. You could have people. Like, we visited a dirt poor tobacco farmer with one tooth. He was about 90 years old, and he said he loved the government, like more than anything. He wouldn't survive without them. Anyone you asked on the street what they thought about the government and what they thought about the communist system, everyone loved it, of course. Because of the risks involved with not loving it. Like, and I think this is very underappreciated, and we think we're immune in the West, but we absolutely aren't. Everyone says, yeah, no. I believe in democracy. I believe in it. We have to do this the democratic way and we have to have the tax. I'm a proud taxpayer. I do my part. Yeah, why are you saying that? Like, ask yourself why people are that way. And I think it has a lot to do with incentives and it has a lot to do with a hidden gun threat behind everything and the risks involved in not being a law-abiding citizen.
Yeah, I mean, I basically run into this when I'm explaining Bitcoin to new groups of people. And one side effect of the BTC Hell conference is that a lot of people that I know in real life here in Finland have started to ask me more about Bitcoin, which has been great. But the largest, I'll say, objection that has come up by smart people who seem to get the technology and even the economic reasons for it, the hurdle now appears to be the money laundering and like tax evasion side of it. And I mean, it's just a lens shift, right? Like, I mean, for the reasons you stated, I am not advocating for tax evasion and I am not advocating for money laundering. I'm not saying to do it. I am saying that Bitcoin increases the ability to do it is neutral to good, definitely. Because the thing is, it's just a system opt-out, right? And the biblical render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's is kind of the situation that I think we're in right now. Like, we do live in countries and we do live in systems that require you to pay your taxes, and not getting on the bad side of that is probably good for your and your family's physical health, right? But any degree to which we can create a new parallel system that doesn't have these problems and eventually trends toward a world where the government is smaller and the power of the monopoly on violence is less is a good thing. So gradualism, and I'm not advocating for people in Finland to buy Bitcoin and then do mass money laundering and tax evasion, but I am advocating for Finland to start to have less taxes and to have less of a burden on its citizens and make the economy freer. I definitely want that. So it's sort of two things at the same time, I guess. But
yeah, and when you're saying this, do you think you're saying it because there's a risk to taking the opposite position?
Yes.
Good. Then we... Full disclaimer. So no, and this is exactly what I'm talking about. Like, you're proving my thesis in a way. And to me, it's all about optionality. Like, and I, as most of our listeners probably know by now, I'm a full 100% voluntarist. I think everything should be voluntary. And I don't like aggression. I don't like coercion. And therefore, if there's a tool to make, you know, victimless crime laws, such as tax laws, less enforceable, then that's a good thing. And if you don't believe that, I don't think you will ever get Bitcoin. Like, not to the full extent, at least.
No, I can agree with that. Although it's a journey. Everyone goes on a journey. Let's see. Shall we continue with the chapter?
Absolutely.
Have you ever walked into a brick-and-mortar store and asked them where you could find something that they didn't have? The answer you can expect is one that recommends another, often competing, store. Despite the fact that the first store has nothing to gain from you going to another store instead, this level of courtesy can be expected almost anywhere. Why is that? Shouldn't the evil mechanics of the free market system have thwarted such behavior in brick-and-mortar store employees by now? Quite the opposite. Markets evolve into friendly places because a seller's top priority is always the satisfaction of the customer. It has to be. If a customer gets irritated or angry because of the attitude of an employee of a certain store, he will cease to shop there. An entrepreneur is always a slave to his customer's wants and needs. The flip side of this coin is that the customer is always the master of the entrepreneur, but only if he's in control of his wants and needs. In order to be in control of one's wants and needs, one needs to be self-sufficient. In order to become self-sufficient, one needs to be allowed to pursue one's goals relatively unhindered. When markets aren't truly free but crippled by interventionists, self-sufficiency becomes harder to achieve. This skews the prices of stuff that people want in comparison with the prices of what they actually need. People who aren't even close to being self-sufficient but still have a steady income from social security programs buy frivolous things they don't really need all the time. The fact that you can be poor and obese at the same time is a testament to this. That combination was unthinkable everywhere in the world a mere 100 years ago. The entrepreneurs won't complain, though. Whether or not their customers are really acting in their own long-term best interest or not matters little to them. This is a feature, not a bug, in the free market system. And it does work, but only if the customer realizes that how they ought to allocate their resources is their problem, and theirs alone. A semi-free market, distorted by interventionism, can never reach its full potential because of these effects. Yes. Very good.
First of all, I wonder where the expression brick and mortar comes from. Do you know?
I don't.
No, me neither. It's just a funny expression to me, a brick and mortar store.
Okay. I mean, I think it just literally refers to that it's the physical building as opposed to online.
Probably. Yeah, and I love this first example here, that you're well-treated, even well-treated to merchants point you to alternative products that they don't have anything to gain from, seemingly don't have anything to gain from doing. Like, instead of telling you that, no, you shouldn't shop there, they're all assholes, you should shop at my store, they usually recommend the other store. Because of this wonderful free market phenomenon, that's better for them, because no one likes a shit talker. No one likes someone who talks down other things. Like, you ought to be friendly and is accommodating to your customers, and that's more important. So it's a very beautiful effect, I think, if we're talking about the first paragraph here first. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on this paragraph, Luke?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting social phenomenon, right? Like, the incentive to just be nice to people and, I don't know, competition and greed aren't the only drivers in the world. And the pure Randian view of this is a little bit, it's not accurate. Like, people
well,
are not...
Well, I think this is the pure Randian view. Sorry for interrupting here, but this is... What I'm trying to explain here is that this is a phenomenon of greed. Like, the entrepreneur has an actual economic incentive to recommend the competing product because it's more valuable to them to seem as the good guy than to actually sell the product.
Yeah. I think what I agree with you. It's a thing of nuance, right? Like what is usually described as like pure greed is not what it is in real life. Like, everyone can be acting in their own economic self-interests and also not be assholes, basically. And that's mediated by culture. And this, of course, is one of the things that I enjoy, the way culture keeps guardrails on itself. And I was actually reading today, coincidentally enough, the difference between a kind of a purely voluntarist society and what Hoppe kind of advocates for, which is like free cities that are allowed to discriminate against people they don't want there. And I think that's actually the kind of system that is perfect. It's perfectly fine. It's perfectly fine to say you are not acting the way that the rest of us people want to act, and so you don't get to live here.
Well, once again, I think that is a total 100% voluntarist system.
Exactly.
Because
exactly.
If you own the property, you get to dictate the rules. That's sort of it. Like, yep. And you can live here in my city or our city that we own together, but only if you're willing to pay the fees for you know, water, electricity, and so on. Like, the Ancapistan to me is not just pure hippie anarchy. It's rather the opposite. It's privately owned stuff and a lot of discrimination. I don't know why discrimination is viewed as a negative word. To me, discrimination is crucial. It's the essence of property rights. I ought to be allowed to discriminate between who gets access to my house or not, and who gets to get into my nightclub, and who gets to say what on my social media platform, and even who I choose to sell stuff to. Like, there was a big debate in San Francisco a while ago when a gay couple ordered a wedding cake where, you know, two men on top, and the baker was a devout religious person or something, and he refused to bake the cake. And there's a big debate about that. And no, we live in a free country; we should be able to order the cake. Well, this is backwards. Like, the merchant should be free to sell whatever he wants to whoever wants to buy it. And what he could have done is said, okay, I'll bake you the cake, but the price will be this, and just increase the price. That's how the market's supposed to function. Everything's subjective, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, discrimination is crucial for property rights to be an actual thing. Like, yeah, there's that.
No, totally agree with it. And I mean, the funny thing with the kind of all these DEI initiatives being excised out of companies now, and I believe truly, rightly, they don't do a thing of good. I mean, the only thing that's any good about, directionally any good about the intention behind the DEI thing is that just don't be a dick to people in the workplace or in general. That's pretty good. But the thing is, companies make a discriminatory decision every time they hire someone because they're discriminating against all of the other people who they didn't hire. And yeah, if they just simply pick the person that they believe is best for the job, and everyone does that, then we'll see who wins, right? And if you have your company that really only wants to hire people who tick as many diversity boxes as possible, put that up against the company that hires the people that they believe is the best at doing the job and see who wins.
Yeah. And as you say, like, just don't be a dick to people is a good intention. But DEI policies, they are institutionalizing dickish behavior by letting different rules apply to different people. That is, by definition, dickish behavior.
Yeah, I would say literally the only thing about it that is accurate, in my view, is that you shouldn't racially abuse people in the workplace, or you shouldn't sexually harass people in the workplace. That's not nice to do. But that's a general thing. That's not a... And it's there is something to be said that society has had to learn that's not appropriate. But, you know... Mandating it through racism and sexism is not also not good.
No, it's increasing the problem. Like, as soon as you get a free lane because of your skin color or your gender, then people are going to, that will create racism. That it's the difference that when different laws applies to different groups of people, that's how you actually create these things. Because me, if I'm the employer and I'm in a total hopium free market ANCAP society here, I get to choose who I employ, and no one has a say in that. And if I'm clever, race or gender shouldn't have that much say in that decision. Merit should. Like, is this person the right guy for the job or the right girl or whatever? And it should be up to me how much I would let my own biases about race or gender play into that. And that will create a fair result because it will produce a world in which things are fair. And who's to say who belongs to what group anyway? If I'm black, but I'm also wearing a mustache, like, was it the mustache or was it the color of my skin that put me into a group category? These groupings are completely subjective too, like how to categorize people into different groups. It's weird. So why shouldn't it be up to the person picking the other guy to discriminate to whatever extent they want? It's just absurd to me.
Yeah, and I think it basically just goes all the way to that the interventionism has the exact opposite effect of what they want. That's it. And this is, I think, one of the things where there's this whole thing about bridging the gap with the politics. And I know you can do the whole, it's everything is to the left of the zero point. But we're talking about trying to bridge the gap with people who are more lefty than not. Like, the good intentions, I recognize that they're there. That most of the people who are voting for these things think that they're doing the right thing by doing it. And I get it. That it's nice to want to have a society where people are taken care of and all this. That's nice. But it results in worse outcomes for everyone. That's the thing. And when we have evidence of that, and we have the solution might be a little messy because decentralized, permissionless things not controlled by anyone cannot force themselves on anyone, cannot be forced upon anyone. It just has to happen. But those people who do decide to take up the permissionless, decentralized opt-out are going to have better outcomes. And we're going to see how that plays out. And that's it.
Absolutely. 100% agree. It's racism and anti-racism are two sides of the same coin. And what we want is no racism, not the vintage kind or the modern kind, which is the anti-racism, the racism of low expectations. Like, and this is so, it was so depressing to me when the whole DIY movement started and hate crime laws and all of that stuff, because society as a whole, I felt, were very close to like getting rid of racism for real. And then they changed the definition. And now it's a thing, I guess. And I wish that wasn't the case.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I mean, I think I remember getting into arguments on the internet with people I knew in real life, but you know, Facebook, whatever, back when I still had it in the early 2010s. I remember just getting into arguments about that back when this was first starting. Like, it's always been intuitive to me that anti-racism is racism. Anti-fascism is fascism. Like, the anti thing is always the thing that it's saying it's against. And I don't mean that by a rule. It's just that it's turned out to be the case. And it's strange because another thing I read is that just the left has completely lost its way. There was probably a time when the political left back in, I don't know, the 50s, 60s, 70s, something like that, was actually doing something good for the average person, when the levers of control were being wielded authoritarianishly by people who had power. And there was this movement of like, you know, whatever, but it's just
stop
completely...
the Vietnam War, for instance. That's a good example.
Totally. Like... totally. But it's just all lost its way. And yeah, I hope there's some, that people who kind of stink from this mindset of let's make society fair and blah, 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 can learn about this stuff and can start to bridge the gap. The polarization is really unfortunate. And yeah, it's unfortunate also that many of the people who kind of are so ingrained in the state and want the state to continue to grow bigger and want the interventionism to increase are just going to be the ones who lose. It's unfortunate for them, but whatever, their choice.
Yeah, and it's back to the war of words. So many words have been hijacked here, including racist and sexist and fascist and all of that, but also liberal, like liberal values. Like, that ought to have something to do with Adam Smith and, you know, being pro free market and live and let live. But it's not. It's all about interventionism these days. No, and there's a reason why Orwell called the totalitarian police force the Ministry of Love in 1984. And that's exactly how it plays out, right? You get these words that are supposed to mean that are literally describing something that is the opposite of what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it's definitely all, it feels upside down, but at least there's a way out, and that's Bitcoin.
There's a way to inverse it.
There's a way to inverse it, absolutely. Well, Knut, I feel like this has been a great discussion. Shall we end it here?
Likewise. And yeah, we should say a word or two about our sponsors before that, I guess. First, we have Bitbox, a fantastic hardware wallet that we are happy to recommend. This little device can store your Bitcoin securely, and they have a very simple interface, so it's very easy to use as well, and we like it a lot.
Absolutely. And they now are fully compatible for iOS users with the new Bitbox 02 Nova, a bunch of other improvements with that. It wasn't a total redesign of the thing, so they didn't give it a totally new name, but it's an improvement on the already good existing product. So go to bitbox.swiss/infinity and you can get a discount there and all that. So check that out. And also go to planb.network and check out everything going on over at Plan B. We're thrilled to be a part of their educational initiative, and they're great supporters of what the Academy is doing here. So we're happy to support them on back. Check out all the classes that they have available. You can learn all about Bitcoin. It's a great place to direct anyone who wants to learn more about Bitcoin too. And they want to translate everything they have into all the languages of the world and keep adding courses and all this, and just spread Bitcoin education throughout the world. So again, planb.network.
Absolutely. And they're hosting this fantastic conference in the end of October, which we are attending, the Plan B Forum. Don't miss that. If you have a chance to go there to Lugano, it's a fantastic place. You can come and talk to us there.
Absolutely. So with that, I think this has been the Bitcoin Infinity Academy. Thank you for listening.
Bye-bye.